Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Hello and welcome back to Death, a Funny Business with Becky Briggs and Stuart Sandeman.
Hello, hello, hello.
Surprise, Tash is not here. I don't think I mentioned this last time, but Tash is on stage in London doing cool things in the musical theatre world. So we are now joined with Stuart Sandeman.
I am Tash today.
You are Tash today.
Yeah.
Do you know what Tash does? Talks a lot, swears a lot.
Okay, we can do that.
You can do that. No, we're so excited to have you on because obviously you were here as a guest last week and now you're in Tash's seat.
Who are you?
Tell us who you are for those who missed last week's episode.
Yeah, I'm Stuart Sandeman. I'm founder of Breath Pods and I help people breathe and do music stuff and a whole host of different things.
And grief-related stuff?
Grief-related, absolutely. grief was my journey into what I do now. Before that, I was in music. So from a grief perspective, I have had my fair share of grief. And from various angles and shapes and forms. And it sent me on a path, a new path of discovery, and led me to breathwork and breathing. And that's what I do now through BreathPod. I teach people to overcome different challenges and grief being a big part of that, helping people to release or integrate their grief and trauma through the power of breath.
Who knew that you could do that? You can. I've been doing your breathwork. Yeah. I've still got the app. I've been doing it. I've been only doing the 10-minute ones because I haven't quite. I don't know. Is it one hour? Your like morning live ones?
No, the morning lives are about 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was an hour.
No, it's 6:30 a.m. 20 to 30 minutes. Set you up for the day. They are the best thing ever.
Okay, I need to
set
do that.
You up for
it's
the
really
day.
Really early.
It is really early. We've gone earlier. We've just started our spring clean month, which is all about detoxifying your body, mind, spirit and energy. And we've decided to go a bit early. Usually it's 7:30 till 8, our morning sessions, but we've gone 6:30 to 7.
God.
Bit earlier, but, you know, early bird catches the worm.
Yeah, no, you're right.
The sun is out this week. We've got that.
I know.
I mean, that's helped a lot,
life
to be honest.
Is good again. Everyone's actually happy to live life now because the sun is out. So it's great. It's great. I'm loving it. I'm here for it.
All day long. Blue skies. Keep them coming.
All day long. Exactly. So today we've got two guests. We've got Kayleigh O'Connor, who is the founder of Good Grief. And we've also got Diane James, the head of pet bereavement support at Blue Cross. Not actually discussed pet bereavement before. Do you talk about dead pets much in your free time?
In my free time? Well, I've lost a pet. I've lost a couple of pets, actually.
There's your rabbit.
The rabbit we talked about earlier. The rabbit got eaten by a fox. That didn't hit me too hard, poor little rabbit. But my family dog, Tosh, when Tosh died, that was a sad moment. He was part of dogs really become like the fabric of your family home, don't they?
They do.
It's such an important thing. And we don't often talk about grief for pets. Or it's maybe shunned away, isn't it? We don't openly have that conversation. Or maybe it's like, oh, your dog died. Oh, yeah, take a minute. All right, back to normal.
You don't really know what to say. I mean, it's as if you know, when a human dies, no one really knows what to say either. But especially a dog, you're just a bit like, take a day off and then come back to school the next day. No one really knows what to do. But I think it'd be interesting to kind of hear what they do and what support they offer. I mean, we got our dog, Tia, when just after Dad died, and she filled this void in our lives, and now she is all we talk about because it's me, my mum, my brother, and we all are quite, me and mum are really close, and me and Oscar are close, but he's always feels like it's two against one. But now there's a dog in the picture, it's fine. There's always something to talk about. There's always something to focus on. So
deflect the attention.
I think that's what it is.
Or definitely. You can just be like, I'm just going to take the dog out.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to leave you dead to it. But yeah, so how are you doing?
Good. Yeah, it was only a week ago we were in here, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So all is good. I've had quite a fun, positive week. Nothing much to report.
I saw something on your Instagram about a juice, your juicing.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know why I'm really, really intrigued by this because this is new to me. What is this? What are you doing?
That's part of the spring clean.
Part of the breath work
So yeah, as part of this month, we're doing spring clean, okay, which is the theme. Roughly speaking, each month we pick a theme with our community for our breathwork sessions in the morning. So in January, we're looking at manifestation. Then we did February focus. And now we're moving in. You know, in March, it's actually the real start of the year. January and February were added to the calendar by Julius Caesar. Before that, March was the start of the year. And that you can still see that in the names, like September being 7, October 8, etc., November 9. So this is the start of the year. So instead of doing your January, the first new year, new me, this is when we should be doing it. So okay, in alignment with that, we've got our spring clean this month. And part of that spring clean, yes, doing our daily breath work to get yourself set and release any tension, any stress, and set yourself up for the day. But we also then, with that, do our full cleanse. So that's what the juicing is teeing people up for. We're going to kick that off on the 18th of March.
So it's not too late, because I actually think I drank more in January than I did in December. And I think I failed. I think I'm the only person who really failed January. And then February just kind of rolled into February. So I can start my year now.
That's exactly right. In fact, it's better.
Okay.
It's better. Winter time is for winter. It's hibernation. Yeah. It's going inwards. It's maybe, that's where we do manifestation then. Yeah. We can go inward and think about what we want and plant the seeds. Mm. Now we're starting the year in March. It's about giving the seeds the perfect optimal conditions so those plants can grow. And that's why we do a bit of a detox, a bit of a cleanse within this month. So yeah, that's what we're doing. And that's going to be including juicing and eating healthy, starting off with like the no crap diet, which is no
salt, sugar and stuff like that. Or are you strict?
We get quite strict when the cleanse kicks off, but no crap is a bit looser. But A does stand for alcohol. We've got C for carbonated drinks, and we've got R for refined sugars, and we've got A for alcohol, and then P for processed foods.
And how long does this last? The whole month?
The whole month, yeah.
Okay.
But then when we kick off with the cleanse, then we move into juicing. It's the 369 cleanse I like to do. I've done it for the last 3 years, but I've generally done a cleanse way longer than that, but this one I've stuck with.
Like a liver cleanse.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not even like a liver cleanse.
It is.
I got it right. Yeah. It's a liver cleanse. Do you know what it does as well, which I think is amazing about cleansing or fasting or things like that, is it resets our brain-gut connection. So yes, it detoxifies the body. Yes, it detoxifies the liver, and we've got all that good stuff going. But we have such an emotional connection to food as well. Also, our dopamine triggered by food.
Oh, I'm so triggered by that. Yeah.
So then you jump into a cleanse and everything starts to taste very bland because there's limited amounts of salt. There's limited amounts of flavor. There's no oils in this diet as well. So you prepare all this. There's also chopping because you're getting all the vegetables ready.
Yeah.
And everything tastes like, I've just spent all this time doing this and everything tastes like nothing.
Nothing. Oh. So what's the point?
The point is, that is the point. It's almost like a 9-day meditation in essence, because you're having to move through and our organs start to secrete all their toxins. So we start to have these, and when we're secreting toxins in the body, then we start to move through and integrate some of these deep-held emotional parts of ourselves as well. So
I was going to say, because I lean towards food when I'm really sad. I mean, like crappy food, because it just fills that void. So after, like, I don't know, a therapy session or something, I'll just really crave sugar. I'll crave like a bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
But really, I should just be sitting in that and actually feeling what's going on. But instead, I'm just pushing that down. So
yeah,
I think that's a good way of...
I think just sitting and feeling and noticing what comes up. It's easier said than done when you're feeling anything. When anything arises in your body, your mind, you just sit with it and go, oh, this is interesting. I'm feeling this way. And when we sit with it, we can start to let it diffuse. Mm. Usually we tend to diffuse it much quicker by saying, actually, what do I need? I'm going to eat something sugary, or I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to numb myself. I'm going to squash that back down or sweep it under the carpet so I don't actually have to feel what's there.
I relate to that so much. And I think that's something we can ask Kayleigh O'Connor, who's going to be joining us after the break. She is has the founder of Good Grief. So I will see you after the break.
FUBAR Radio. What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair. But listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly. It won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got 2 hours, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
But it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
Death. A Funny Business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death of Funny Business with me, Becky Briggs, and
Stuart Sanderman.
We are now joined online with Kaylee O'Connor. Hi, Kaylee, can you hear us?
Hello.
Hey, Kaylee.
Yeah, I can. Hi, nice to meet you. Nice to be here.
And you. Thanks so much for joining us. So you are the founder of Good Grief, and which is the holistic grief support platform. And I believe you founded that after your dad passed away as a kind of to start a community and talk about death. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So I lost my dad when I was 15, avoided my grief for about 6 years. And yeah, became a bit of an anxious mess who didn't know what to do, and I realised something needed to change, and so I started talking about my grief and create Good Grief.
There is so much that you do that I relate to. My dad passed away when I was 18, and I could not find anywhere that was talking about grief, and I was just felt so alone, and I felt like the need, hence this radio show and me speaking to you here today. But can you tell us a bit about your dad? I think we always think it's really important to remember people.
Yeah, oh, thanks for asking that. My dad's called David. He had like a gazillion best friends who all said they were his best friend at his funeral. So he's like the life and soul of the party type person. He was my best friend, and I was a proper daddy's girl growing up. And we loved going to Disney, and just like I had a very happy childhood with him and my mum and my brother. And yeah, I feel very, very lucky to have had that. He was just a really happy man, and very silly and very, very funny. So yeah, thank you for asking that, because yeah, you don't always get to talk about your person. And I know how important it is. So yeah, I really appreciate that.
No, it's really, I think it's important to just keep people alive. We had someone on the show that said they die twice, when they first die and then when you stop saying their name and who they are. And I think that's that really stuck with me, because I think, you know, we've got to keep talking about them to keep them, their spirit alive. And yeah.
In many cultures they do, don't they? They it's almost in the UK, we don't talk about the people who have deceased over and over again. We don't celebrate them as much as we should. So it's a great question to ask.
Yeah, I actually, with my clients, I use something called continuing bonds a lot, which I'm sure you've heard about, which is the idea that we can continue the relationship with the person we've lost. And so I do encourage my clients to talk about their person and to find ways to, you know, if there's guilt there, like how do we coexist that with that guilt? And then maybe it's a forgiveness, or maybe it's acknowledgement from the person they've lost. So yeah, it's really, really important. And it's been really helpful for me, having grown up where you put grief in a box and you don't talk about it, you push through, you keep being positive, to actually be like, oh, actually, there's a way to work with your grief that doesn't mean forgetting or pushing that to a side. Yeah, it's really, really, really helpful. And I wish I knew about it sooner.
Mm. I mean, this idea of put grief in a box, wow, that rings so true with me. Like, so I think only in the last year have I properly started grieving. But I know that you mentioned that you were kind of numbing your grief through like shopping, spending money and booze. That is exactly what I did at the beginning. But I don't think I realized that's what I was doing until I sort of like burnt through my money. I mean, it was on traveling and things that I thought were living. I was living, you know, my fullest, but also I was just avoiding something that I just needed to deal with. What was there kind of a moment where you realized that, shit, like I need to process this in a maybe a better way?
Yeah, there were really quite a few moments where I think I had some red flags or some wake-up calls, and I kept trying to ignore them. A lot of the time it was my body telling me to stop. So I think a really, really clear moment, I was on a year doing my master's, where I was doing like somatic work and dance and yoga, and I was really in my body for, you know, I was at drama school, so I was just doing it for fun and for play. And I started to get really, really dysregulated and having panic attacks. And I fainted outside of a supermarket. I had gone in to get my free cup of tea and just dropped down and fainted. And it was in London and everyone was like, what's just happened? And I just stood up and went back on with my day. And I really had to take a moment and think, wow, what just actually happened? Like, something needs to change here. Your body's telling you to stop. And at that time in my life, I was going to the gym every morning, yoga every day, dance every day, working multiple jobs to afford my training. And then usually the gym after all of that as well. And I was just go, 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 and trying to keep really, really busy, but in a different way, to kind of like the alcohol and stuff that had happened the years before. So yeah, I think that was a really big moment where I was like, oh, okay, your body's actually like telling you to stop here now. You can't just keep pushing through. And I had to make a change.
And how did you realize, so that was 6 years after your dad passing, and what was it that made you realize that it was actually grief that was causing this disruption in your body and mind?
I think there were a few things. I had a really good yoga teacher who said to me, I was having a really rubbish day, and she was like, what if instead of going to the gym after work, after the training today, you just went home and felt your emotions? And I looked at her like, sorry.
Excuse me?
what are you on about? And I think about this woman. She was an Irish woman, and my dad didn't have an accent, but he was Irish man. And I just think, oh my God, like, I can't forget that voice, like, because it was so important. And I was like, feel my emotions. And another person at the same year said I was always clowning. And I started to feel clowning. And I was like, because I was always so smiley and happy. And I thought, there's nothing wrong with that. And then it just made me realize, okay, like, it's the emotions that I'm not like dealing with. I also think I was quite a numb person, quite surface level in my relationship, but very like silly in my relationships. But my friends would say, you're a lone wolf. You'll never find somebody. You'll never be in a relationship. And that was really sad. I was like, oh, I really want to be in a relationship. And I realized, okay, like, it's my relationship with my emotions here. And I'd tried to deal with my emotions over the years. Like I lost a friend during university, went to the university counsellor and they were like, okay, you can try grief talk therapy or you can try antidepressants. And I was really like bitter about all of that. I was like, I don't want the help. I was very, I wanted to do it myself. So I feel like all of this was like an unlearning of all these protective mechanisms of being like cold and like numb and in control, and learning to like be in where I was, which was really scary.
Being present, I think, can be really daunting. We were just talking about that earlier, that you kind of sometimes do just have to sit in it to realize what is it that's going to come to surface. And I think that I've tried therapy, just talking back and forth, and it really wasn't helpful because I wasn't really releasing anything. And I think for me, it's this release that feels like, oh, I'm dealing with my grief because I'm actually letting something out of my body, which I experienced. So Stuart does breath work. I don't know if I've introduced you to Stuart. Sorry, normally it's Tasha here. So that's happened through breath work, and it's happened through my therapy sessions where I kind of almost like in this hypnosis state. And that's the only time I've like properly kind of just kind of like let go. Is that the sort of like stuff that you do as well in terms of when you're kind of speaking to people about grief and dealing in inverted commas with it?
Yeah. Yes, I work in a holistic way for sure. Like it's mind and body. So I use a lot of somatic practices, embodied processing, breath work. For me, I didn't realize that was like the medicine until I looked back at what was helping me. And like intuitively, whether it was like dancing all night on a like club dance floor and just like feeling everything and feeling so, you know, I guess, alive. And then also feeling really, really sad coming home after a night out.
Oh my God, I relate to that so much. I can't even tell you. I used to dread going home. Dread it, yeah. Because then I have to sit with my anxiety knowing that I was on my own, and it was just the worst feeling. But I felt so much love when I'm up on that stage dancing. Yeah,
exactly that. And I'd go home and I'd sit in a bath filled with mascara blaring out Rihanna, just be like, and then like the next day, like it didn't happen. and obviously dance generally, like I love dancing. It's helped me so much. And I guess like when I was studying drama, like just being able to be different people without realizing it was actually me expressing things that without it feeling really like not having to explain it. So a lot of the work I do with my clients now is actually, you know, all the layers, the mind, the body, the spirit, and how grief impacts everything, because it's not just one loss, it's all of the secondary losses that follow a loss that people don't often understand. And yeah, talking's great, but it's not going to get underneath that. I don't know if you've heard that fact before, but it's something that I love to share and love to remind myself, is that the nervous system knows no time. So people will say time heals grief, but actually it cannot heal the nervous system. You must use the nervous system practices. You must use your breath. You must use your body.
It's about coming back to presence again. If we're truly present, there is no time when we're in presence. So you have to just feel, and you have to come into it and embody whatever it is that you're holding on to. It's really nice. So can you tell us, you've started Good Grief. Can you tell us in your own words what that is and how you support people?
Yeah, so Good Grief started off as a thing in a cafe, just a local cafe, and now it's an online community of many people who've lost a parent. We come together and we talk about the realities of parent loss, and I offer group support, and I've created a certification for people to train to become holistic grief coaches. And the reason why I did that is because I feel like grief support isn't accessible, and I want to be a change in the grief space for people who need the support and get the right support, so they don't have to avoid it for years and years and years like I did. It's the most amazing thing, and I've been doing it now for 6 or 7 years. So really, it's as I started to work with my own grief, I started doing something about it for others. And
that's so nice. You've got training school as well. I feel like it's not just something you want to go and train for as a to become a coach, but it seems like a life skill, that because people can't often hold space for somebody that's grieving. And it's that holding space, those skills that we don't learn. And often guys are even worse, like, oh, it's okay, pat on the back. But having those skills or tools on how to hold space for somebody is so invaluable, not just for somebody wanting to be a grief coach, but I think it's such a tool that we can use at any point in our life. Because as you said, we all will experience loss of a parent, etc., throughout our life. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing work. And we've got people training in Africa, in Indonesia, in America, in the UK, in Canada. So, like,
wow, it's amazing.
Been a big change in the grief space.
And like, for anyone listening now who maybe have gone through or going through a loss of a parent or a loved one or anyone, what are the kind of advice would you say to kind of give them? I'm thinking, like yourself, you didn't know where to turn to. Obviously good grief is a good place to start, but have you got any kind of just simple, easy kind of, yeah, tips?
Yeah, I think a really simple tip is to validate your needs in action. So I think our needs often go unmet, and actually a lot of the time our body's telling us what we need, whether it is more rest or whether it is more boundaries, whether it is to connect with your loved one, you know, writing a letter or putting on their favorite song. I think if you can like validate yourself, because there's a lot of misconceptions about grief, there's a lot of noise that can make you feel like you're grieving wrong, or that you should be, you know, over this, or that you should be further along. And actually, if you can keep coming back to validating where you're at and what you need and look after yourself like that, I think that's really important. And something I wish I knew sooner, because I was doing the opposite of that. I was judging everything I needed and thinking it was wrong. Where you're at is where you're at, and that's really, really important to come back to.
Again, being present.
There's a theme.
With all the people you've worked with, because there's been thousands of people now you've worked with, is there a particular like breakthrough moment that you see with people, or is it so varied? You said that there's everyone's different, everyone's process or timeline, although we're not talking about timelines, but some people might get over it quicker than others, or maybe process that or integrate it quicker. But is there a certain sort of breakthrough moment that you know that this person's processed their grief? How do you see that or quantify it?
I quantify it around their level of safety, their internal safety. And a lot of people come to me where they have lost everything that makes them feel safe. Their person may have made them feel safe. Their routine has changed. Their family dynamics have changed. Everything has changed. And so there's no external safety. And in order to build internal safety, we need co-regulation. And that's safety with another person, being seen, being heard, being held, holding space, like you said. So over the course of coaching, the person often starts with no safety whatsoever. Then they feel safe with you. And then you get a text like I received over the weekend. Oh my goodness, something triggered me and I used a breath tool to process my anger. And you're like, this person actually can go out and, you know, they don't need me because they've learned to use their tools and they've learned to rebuild their internal safety. That would be something I look for and want for everybody.
And something else that I read, you'd written, no one talks about how losing a parent makes you scared of losing your loved ones, so you can push them away instead. Are there any trends with the people that you work with where, in terms of like how the loss of a parent has impacted their relationships? Mm. Is there a normal pattern of behaviour? Or
it differs. Yeah, it differs. Our attachment to the people we love, if we're attached to something, when we lose it, we grieve it. So it's directly linked. So for me, I became like more anxious and avoidant. So I would like ignore people. And then if they ignored my text, panic and think, oh my goodness, I've done something wrong, or constantly ask, like, have I upset you? And, you know, be really, really panicked if I hadn't heard back from somebody. there tends to be, I have a lot of clients who are anxious, very anxious, and fear more loss and fear losing people, become, you know, a bit of people pleaser because they're worried to upset others.
Yeah.
And then I also have clients who are super avoidant. They cut people off. They get more surface level. And I think, you know, we all have different attachment styles depending on our upbringing and, you know, our unique, you know, personality. And I think whatever that is, I always say like grief like throws fertilizer on the weeds. So things that you struggle with just get bigger. And relationships are one of those.
Yeah. I'm terrified of, like, I've just got into a new relationship and I'm so scared of like him dying. Like, I've spoken a bit about it before, but it's just, once you've gone through losing someone, it's just the thought of having to go through that again with someone that you love is just really, really daunting. And it's a shame, I think, that my mind goes to that place, because I should just be present and enjoying spending time with this person. And the worst isn't always going to happen, but I think sometimes when the worst has happened, it's very easy for your mind to go that place. I don't know if you both felt like that before.
Yeah, it can be a daunting thing starting a new relationship. Mine was slightly different as well. It wasn't a case of that person dying, but it was just the understanding of moving on from a relationship that you had where you loved somebody and now you're with somebody else. So it's I think it's going to be different every dynamic that you have, but also understanding your relationship with death, and that is what you've got to be present with. And that's a lot of the things that I understood. My relationship with death, having worked through it and done a lot of breath work and lots of different tools, coaching tools, and similar to what Kaylee teaches here. And I find that once you've done a lot of that work and you've moved through and integrated it and you have those tools, then it just allows you to live more and you are fully present in the time that you're with people. So that you're not fearing what's to come, because we don't know what's to come.
Yeah.
We don't know what's around the corner, but we do know what's right now and here. And I think when we can connect to that present moment, then we're much more able to enjoy and live our fullest life and days.
Mm. That's true. Maybe I need to start doing more of these present tools and activities. Yeah.
I find even if you do things that, you know, like, you know, having a drink and really being present with that drink, like, and just like, you know, I drink hot water, so it's not as nice as tea or a coffee, but
mindful
in that moment, and like building little micro moments of that, and then it getting bigger, because being in the now can be really scary too.
Yeah, I mean that's the scary part.
Why we do all these shopping sprees. No, yeah. I don't do that, I promise. No, thank you so much, Kaylee, for joining us and for sharing about good grief, and thanks for creating a space where we can all talk about death, because that's what we love to do.
Thanks so much.
Take care, and we'll see you after the break. Bye.
Foodbar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on Foodbar Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
You're listening to Foobar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favorite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Foobar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Foobar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The Foobar Radio app. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that? You did Strictly Come Dancing.
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair. But listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly. It won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got to it, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Welcome back to Death, a funny business.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. We are now joined with Diane James, who is the head of Blue Cross Pet Bereavement Support Service, which is a free helpline service which supports any type of pet loss. Hello, Diane. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Thanks for joining us.
No, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Have you had a good day? Let's start with that.
Do you know, I have, because I've seen the sun for the first time in weeks, and yes, it's been lovely.
We were just saying that earlier. Life is going to be all right. It's going to be
everyone's
fine.
Everyone's thawing out right now. It's like thawing out after winter. It's like, yes, summer's here. Life is good.
It is.
It is. So we haven't actually spoken to anyone. So normally it's Natasha who I'm here with. So this is Stuart. Stuart, tell us, in case we've got new listeners, who are you?
I'm Stuart from BreathPod, and I work with all walks of life, helping people breathe. And in terms of grief, I help people move through grieving process or work through trauma by using their breath.
And so we often talk about the death of humans. That is normally what we talk about. But today we're talking about pets. And please tell us kind of what do you offer at Blue Cross?
Well, excuse me, at Blue Cross, we've been offering a free support service for over 30 years now. Believe it or not, not everyone's aware. We supply free support and emotional support, not counselling, I hasten to add, for any type of pet loss. We're open every day of the year, 8:30 to 8:30. And people can contact us by phone, email, web chat, and we have a closed Facebook site. And over 30,000 people a year at the moment do contact us that we support.
Wow. 30,000? Wow. That's a busy phone line.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, that is, because I think people shy away from pet grief, or they don't talk. I mean, we don't really talk about grief in general here in this country, I don't think, but especially pets, because I think that it's not the conventional type of grief, is it? And do you find that people feel like their grief isn't valid, or how do people kind of what do they say when they speak to you on the line?
Well, I would say over the past sort of maybe 7 years or so, it started to improve how people understand the loss of a pet and that the effect it has on people, whether it be by death or stolen or lost, it's devastating. And the most important thing is that people realise how they feel is normal. Everybody's different, everybody grieves in a different way, and everybody feels differently. Some people really don't understand how the loss of a pet can impact you so much, forgetting that we also work with things like assistance dogs, for example, guide dogs, dogs for hearing, so that they are a different lifeline for people, but also are everyday animals. I mean, I absolutely love my two dogs. They are part of my family. You know, they've got us through COVID. They've got us through deaths of people we love, and their support is huge. As much as their love is unconditional, we provide them as well.
Yeah.
It's so important. Like you said, it's a pet becomes part of the family. Do you see a difference then? Is there a difference between the grieving of a pet rather than a human? Or do you notice a difference?
you know, it's a real, a lot of people are quite aghast if we say it's very similar. But what we did about sort of 6 or 7 years ago is we looked at human loss and versus animal loss. Whilst there were some similarities and crossovers, there was also some unique differences. So everybody talks about people like Kubler-Ross and the grief cycle based on human loss. So we then started to look at how guilt impacts on people if they have to sign a paperwork for an animal to be euthanized, how it impacts on them, how it is their social being that for them to get out the house and have a life, and how they rely on that. And when they lose that, the impact is huge. So there are an awful lot of similarities between human and animal loss. But again, a lot of because obviously they can't speak to you and they're so reliant on you, a lot of differences in that sense.
Mm. And what got you into this work? How did you end up as a pet bereavement?
Really strange. I went back to university, did my postgrad in counselling, and I worked at a hospice for a while for adults and children. And then when I lost my dad, I thought, I can't cope with human loss. It's very difficult because you don't want to mirror it onto other people. And I thought, right, I'm going to put my perfect dream job into the laptop. And I put in work with a charity, work with animals, work with grief, and up popped Blue Cross.
Aww.
And it's my perfect job and I absolutely love it. And the people I work with, and people find it strange, and you'll understand this, that I love working with bereavement and grief because it's the help and support that we can give people that makes a difference. But I love it.
It is, but it's also, do you find it quite heavy? And how do you cope, you know, personally when you're having to deal with grief every day?
I would say the people who take all the calls, because we have over 400 volunteers out there around the UK who are home-based, who are absolutely trained to an inch of everything, and they are phenomenal, and they give their time for free. But we also get vulnerable callers, as you can imagine, where we need to support that much more. So when we do get these emotional calls or vulnerable callers, it's important that we're in the right place to handle them. So as a team, we rely on each other for support, supervision. For me, I find at the end of the day, walking my dogs and just taking myself out of the environment I was in, and very much what you said, like breathing, things like breathing help me, visualization, and I journal. I write lots of things down because it helps me to clear it out my head. And in the time I've been with Blue Cross, I've lost both my parents, and I think my job has been my saviour, because emotionally, being able to support, it makes me realise, you know, the importance of what we do. It is tough sometimes, you know, but people out there are phenomenal in the time they give and the work they do for us.
That's incredible that people, that many volunteers as well. And it's obviously needed. People need to have someone to talk to, and ways to kind of process that grief, whether it is a human or an animal.
Yep. I'm sorry, I talk an awful lot, don't I?
No, that's why you're here. Please, go.
But I think it's really important that people realise they can talk. Annually, we tend, you know, it's almost become known that people say men can't say how they feel emotionally. And we work annually on a Manimal campaign where we deal with men's mental health and men that lose animals and suffer from that loss, because it's just as important. But we find that things like Facebook or email, ways where they don't have to sort of speak to people, they can communicate with us about their loss. And, it's, you know, children and pet loss. I'm a great believer that and my daughter's exactly a product of this. That sounds a terrible product. but, she, you know, we've got her where she can understand death, because often our first loss is an animal.
Yes, how important is this? Because I lost my gerbils I don't know how old was I, not because I think I actually don't know why they died, but they died, and I remember I had to take 2 days off school, and it was really, really sad. I'm not sure it did prepare me for my dad's death, but it definitely taught me that, you know, what death is. But how important is that for kids to learn?
You know, it's massively important that we've give them the credit that they often don't get, that they are more resilient than we realise. Being truthful is really, really important, and telling them not gory details, but when they ask questions, telling them the truth, so that we are almost preparing them for, you know, sadly, every living thing dies. You know, we had a little service for On the Guinea Pig in the garden, and it was important that when my daughter asked about him, I told her. And Chester, my dog, now is 14. We already started his bucket list, and sadly, we've already started his memory box, because he's an old boy, not very well. But we wanted to make memories making the memory box. So when we took his paw prints, you know, we both laughed and cried. We cut a little bit of his tail off and put it in a little jar. So it seems really sad, but it's important that, you know, we understand nothing is here forever and that we can prepare them.
That's really interesting that you're actually already preparing for the death. But that's because does that help in the grieving process then? To have kind of done that and in the closure?
It does for us. I mean, everyone, again, is different, and some people would find it strange. It does for us because she lives away now, and Chester, her dog, stays with me. And so when she came home, we decided we'd do it, and it prepares her because she knows that soon she'll get that call, sadly. So we're ready. And his bucket list, I think, is probably for me, because he wouldn't know that he needs to have a little Sunday dinner on a plate, or that he needs to run free in a field because his recall's going now, he's deaf. But it helps. I think it helps me as much as him.
Aww.
Is there some other practical steps then? If somebody has lost a pet, or their pet is older dog or something like that, is there practical steps or support that you offer through your services?
There is. Do you know, it's the word, we changed the word last year from bereavement to loss, because everybody associates bereavement with the death of. But we also work with people pre the loss of an animal. So, for example, if they go to the vets and they're told that their animal has a terminal illness, but it can be kept alive for, you know, in a quality of life for a number of months, we work with them on that. The same as things that, you know, if they need to prepare for things, we can talk them through what to do, how to do it. If an animal's lost, for example, there is no closure. So we help them work with that as well, because if it's never found or it's stolen, they obviously don't have anything they can mourn, but we all work with them on writing it letters, very similar to human loss, writing letters to it or memorialising it, so that we work with them, anniversaries, birthdays, anything like that at all, we're always there.
And can you share some examples or stories that have stood out to you in your work where your service made a difference in someone's grieving process? Is there anything, yeah, that's stuck out?
I've got a sad one, and obviously I'll anonymise it. And it was actually that this gentleman, it was just after COVID or just nearing the end, and this gentleman used our service because sadly his dog died. And he was an older gentleman, and his dog was his last link to his wife, who died the year before. So often you get associations because you'll have memories between you. When his dog died, he was left on his own, had nobody to visit him, nobody to you know, go and see him, check how he was. And he really felt that he didn't want to be here anymore. And after talking to us, coming through to me, and I spoke to him, he decided that as soon as he could, he would go out and get another rescue pet, which he did. And, you know, I wouldn't say talking to him was, I was his saviour, but it made the difference of him realising that he was important and he needed to be here. So, we you know, we get some really sad stories like that, and that was amazing. Or we get other ones where, you know, it's not always cat and dog. It could be horse. It could be a small animal. You know, we've had people call up about carp, chickens. So what we really need to realise is that everybody, no matter what the animal, it's important to them, and it, you know, it's a contact in their life, because, for example, somebody had rescued chickens from a battery farm, and they were looking after them when they died. The thing that they needed to remember was they'd given them a good few years of life afterwards from the, you know, the sad life that they'd had. But we get masses of really, really, you know, it's a tough time when people are going through it. We know that. And any support at all we can give, and the difference we make is really important to us.
Well, that's, yeah, testament to your work. I think that's amazing. Thank you so much to you and your team for being there and helping people. I mean, it sounds like you definitely did help that man's life. So, yeah, amazing. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining us. Really appreciate your
time.
Thank you so much. And we will maybe, yeah, we'll... What's happening, Jazz? I'm talking to the producer. We're going to have a chat. But thank you so much. Bye. I got confused. We're still live.
We are still live.
I think because Tash isn't here, it's thrown me off.
Yeah.
I'm like, but Diane needs to go. But that was really interesting. And also, I think sometimes you forget that it's not just about the death. Like, grieving can be a loss of something else. It could be like, yeah, the dog was stolen, or the loss of, we were talking about earlier, your family home.
Yeah.
There's loads of different types of losses.
Yeah, and they're interesting ones, because you wouldn't even go and reach support, say, I'm grieving my family home that I can't go back to. Yeah. I still have dreams about my old family home, and I'm actually like sneaking in to the family home because somebody else is there, and I'm like, oh, I need to. And
so
I've
what
got
does
to,
that mean?
Is I
it,
don't know.
Is it just?
I need to look it up.
Yeah, what does that mean?
There's probably some hidden meaning because I'm like sneaking around, like hoping I don't get caught by the person that now lives there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's probably still a grievance of sorts.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating, and it's amazing that they have, especially for pets, which is. Even after talking about that, it's a real grievance, but my family home is a real grievance too.
It is, accept it. Yeah, we'll acknowledge that.
Yeah. Now, both interviews today were really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I loved hearing more about the older chap there that she said he basically, his wife had passed away, and then it was the link with the pet dog to the wife. So it almost sounded like he hadn't fully grieved his loss. But the dog was keeping him kind of focused on her and that connection and having that support mechanism. So it's
and the
it's
need to then get another dog, not that we should analyse this poor man's life, but he obviously needed maybe to kind of fill that void or have or share his love maybe for towards something else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Who knows?
Well, you know, it's a funny business, isn't it?
It's a funny business. This is what I mean. This is why it's so exciting having, having all different types of people on the show because there is so much that we grieve and, yeah.
Well, there we go.
There we go. You got any plans this week?
My plans this week, I am getting things ready to rock and roll with our app. We've still got our spring clean, like we said.
Yeah.
So I'm just focusing on that, getting ourselves set up for the cleanse that you're
going to
do.
I'm going to your workshop.
On the 15th?
Yeah, it's 3 hours.
Yes.
What's happening for 3 hours? What have I signed myself up for?
You signed yourself up for actually a process that will hopefully work through grief.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a longer form workshop deliberately to release held trauma in the body. Now, trauma can sound a scary word, but grief falls into that bucket. When we go through our life, we hold back ourselves from feeling. We were talking about presence earlier today. And the way we stop ourselves being fully present with our feelings is by holding our breath. So when we are angry, we hold back the anger by holding our breath. Or when we are really sad and upset, we hold back the tears by holding our breath. Or even laughter, we hold back our laughter by holding our breath. So we create this tension in our body and we're not allowing ourselves, we're basically holding on to the past through tension in our body, in our breathing cycle. So in that 3-hour workshop, we're going to work through all that stuff. That's exactly what it's there for.
So
creating a safe space.
I might cry.
You may cry.
I did on the last one, I did.
Yeah, I think if that needs to flow, that is exactly what needs to happen. People go through anything they've numbed themselves from feeling, anything they've avoided feeling, anything they've swept under the carpet and not been fully present with. We've been talking about this a lot today. Like, how do we feel our feelings? How do we actually sit in that space and feel unconditionally? And that workshop just creates the environment for us to do that. So it's a powerful way to work through grief. Yeah. It's a powerful way to work through anything that we've been holding on to so that we can move forward with a bit more energy, a bit more flow. We're not carrying the weight of our grief. And that was certainly the experience through my grief and finding breathwork was I felt lighter. My memories were still there. It was still sad. And the experience was all sad looking back. But this tension that was held in my body had disappeared.
I also think there's something to be said for leading a simple life. And obviously living in London, there's this kind of rat race and this like buzz. But my grandparents, I think, are really happy because they wake up and they're excited to have their morning cup of coffee and they just go on a long walk and they come home, they make lunch and it's like a proper lunch, you know, like rice and chicken and some vegetables. And then they go and maybe potter around the garden and then they have another cup of coffee and then they go to bed and they eat dinner and go to bed. And they're really content. And I think content, that sits very closely with being present as well.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely, it can be.
Because we're not trying to fill that kind of void and that silence with noise.
Yeah, well, I find that the world that we live in now, because of social media and other things like that, we're chasing for something. So we're never fully satisfied because there's always something more to chase, or there's something, another
It's always a bigger house.
There's always something more. There's always something more, which is actually scarcity. Again, we're not fully in the moment and fully grateful for what we have. And that, I think that's the shift that we've got to have, is just sitting in gratitude and not having to chase the whole time.
Well, I'm going to say thanks to you then for filling Tasha's seat today.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Stuart Sandeman, and for co-hosting with me today. And thank you to Kaylee O'Connor and Diane for joining us on the show. It's been super interesting to chat more about grief and meet different types of people. I hope you have a great week. Are you back? I hope you're back. Are you coming back? Are you joining me again?
I am on the 18th.
Amazing. So back on the 18th.
You will have been at our workshop.
I would have done it. Okay, let's definitely do a debrief on that.
We'll do a full debrief. On the 18th.
Thanks, guys. Take care. See you next week. Bye.